Chariot Solutions TechCast, episode number 88. Mike Hardington from Drifty on the Ionic Framework. The TechCast is sponsored by Chariot Solutions. Full-stack development services in Java, Scala, Spring, mobile, JavaScript, and much more. Visit us on the web at chariotsolutions.com and learn about our training at chariotsolutions.com/training. On the show today, we feature Mike Hardington of Drifty, the company behind the Ionic Framework. Mike is giving a talk on Ionic at the Philly Emerging Tech Show this year. Ionic is a Cordova-based mobile application development framework. Using AngularJS as the core web framework, SAS for CSS simplification, and libraries in Angular such as the NG Cordova module, Ionic makes building cross-device applications easier. We talked to Mike about Drifty's earlier tools, such as Kotika, how they came up with Ionic itself, and about its use of Angular and other technologies. On to the interview. Mike Hardington, thank you very much for coming on the TechCast today.
Thank you for having me, Ken.
Mike is a developer advocate at Drifty for Ionic. What does Drifty do? Is it specifically a product company?
So Drifty is interface builders using Bootstrap and jQuery Mobile. Our past two products were called Kotika and Jabstrap.
Oh, right. I've heard of those.
So that's kind of where Drifty as a company started and then evolved into doing things for mobile development after hearing feedback saying, hey, we're trying to make a mobile app using jQuery Mobile, but we're hitting all these performance issues. Founders at the time said, well, why don't we just make our own framework and do it right and make it performant? So that's kind of where everything started. And now it's getting back to, all right, we've made the framework. Let's actually start building out some services and get back to our interface builders and go from there.
So, I mean, just to kind of set the stage for developers out there, you know, you certainly have a couple different ways to work in building mobile applications. You could build native applications, right? And you could learn, you know, the iOS development mechanism and then go and do an app in Android and learn the Java way of doing it, et cetera. But up until recently anyway, the mobile web way of doing it, which was essentially either hosting in the browser and, you know, just letting the browser do its work or embedding a browser view in an application, the performance wasn't great and the features weren't great. For the last couple of years, that's improved. Ionic, specifically, as you mentioned, was kind of performance driven. Ionic was built from the ground up to use Angular. And so I guess that's for two reasons, I'm thinking. Obviously, it's for the learning factor where you've got these nice tags to represent different pieces of a mobile application. And then, of course, it's the potential of the performance in the browser. How have you seen the browser performance increase over time from mobile apps?
It depends on if you're looking at like older devices, specifically anything pre-Android 4.0, performance just isn't there. But if you're going to go from there on up and iOS 7, yeah, Angular has just been great because, you know, minimizing DOM thrashing and everything. And it allows us to be as performant as we possibly can and making sure that we're not going to mess around with much, like adding all these extra classes. Angular has been great for us for just, you know, render this content and just keep it that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's things like, you know, not overly nesting components and,
right,
you know, I've seen like with Chrome Profiler and stuff, you can see these deep layers of divs as all these components are wired together. And I guess your directives kind of keep you from having people write that kind of code, right?
Right. I mean, the best part about the directives is that I don't have to think about that. As a developer, I can just use the tags that are given to me, add a couple things here and there, like maybe classes for styling. But most of the underlying functionality is set for me, and I don't have to worry about it.
Right. So for a developer getting started with Ionic, and I know you're going to go through a real demo at ETE, how do you interact with it?
So to get started, like right off the bat, we have a CLI tool that you can actually use. It's built on top of Node. You can actually go ahead, use this, and start creating your project and scaffolding out starter structures saying, you know, if you want to use something like a tabs-based layout or even a side menus layout, and you can go ahead and enter that command and get that structure set up and then start going from there. And you know, once that project structure is there, it's basically working in Angular.
And so the tool basically embeds PhoneGap, right, or Cordova these days. So you're based on Cordova as your kind of deployment platform.
Right. But you can use PhoneGap and PhoneGap build if you want.
So what are some of the challenges of developing a mobile application in terms of things like networking, and how might you solve those with that platform? Same origin policy, you know, running the browser instead of running the mobile device, that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, since it's on the device, you know, a lot of stuff like issues with cores, we don't really have to worry about. They kind of get taken away for us. But anything else, there isn't much of an issue. It is a web view, but you're not as limited as you are to, say, like developing in Chrome or Safari.
Right. But when you are developing in Chrome or Safari, you have a way like of basically adding a proxy, right? So that you don't have to deal with the cores issues.
Right. We have it set up so that way if you wanted to make cross-origin calls, we can just give you a proxy and then it's all taken care of for you. And we actually did a really nice blog post about it a couple weeks back on how to set it up. And if you are developing locally, you can have this gulp task to actually set everything up for you. And then once you actually deploy, it'll just remove it.
How much can you customize the framework you have? I mean, it's pretty much whatever you want to add along with it just goes in as part of the web app, right?
Right. Well, I mean, if you want to customize it as far as like custom components, yeah, you can in fact like include any additional Angular directives that are out there. I've done a couple of ones where I'll embed Angular UI's Google Map component and just go from there. People who are using either Google, the Angular UI one or Leaflet, if you want to add another slider in there, you can go ahead and use that as well. As far as going as customizing it and theming everything for, like, say, your product, we have a whole SAS setup. We're using SAS for our styling. So you can go ahead and just inject all the SAS files that we have already written, and then go ahead and start overriding some of the variables, using some of the mix-ins that we're using internally, and you get to benefit from just inheriting all of that.
Right. And I did notice if you run on Android, for example, with tabs, the tabs that go on the bottom, and for iOS, they go in the top, that kind of thing. Or maybe it's vice versa, I forget. But so you do have, I guess, different theming differences on different platforms, right?
Right. Yeah. We're calling that platform continuity.
Okay.
So again, to fit with each platform's specific design guidelines, we're switching things around. So, Android prefers to have their titles aligned to the left and tabs on top. Where iOS, they prefer centered titles and their tabs on bottom. We're changing it out automatically by default, but you can go ahead and actually and override it and customize it however you want. So if you want your title, to be centered on Android, you can do that. Or if you want it right aligned on Android, you can do that as well.
So with the Angular team right now looking long-term at Angular 2, I'm assuming you're going to keep tracking with 1.x for the short-term and mid-term. But what are you guys doing? I saw there was a tweet about, and maybe it was even a blog post by one of your people, saying that you were going to get together with the people on the Angular team and kind of do a workshop. What are your thoughts about where you guys are headed with Angular 2?
Right now, it's still very early stages, especially since, Angular 2 is still being heavily developed. And I like the direction where it's going. We have really close contact with core members of the Angular team. So that way, if we have questions or anything, we can get in touch with them and ask them and get their opinion on everything. But other than just like getting general, how do we set everything up for, it's really just kind of demos and tinkering and trying to figure out what the best practice is going to be.
Yeah, because I know I went to ngConf this year and it did seem like they were pretty early on. I know there's a lot of groundwork they laid, but they don't really have a fully functional platform yet.
Right. And some of the stuff that they did show, especially like Misho's talk, it was really great to see see some of the logic and semantics behind what they were actually doing. And it makes so much sense now.
Yeah. I mean, in November, it made none to me. I looked at it and went, ooh, yeah, that's a lot different, and I'm not sure why.
Right.
But the minute he started explaining, and for those who haven't seen any of this or are kind of tracking Angular, the Angular 2 platform is kind of a rewrite from prior versions of Angular, and they're starting from performance first, basically, trying to find a way to make everything as fast as possible.
Yeah, performance and just building on top of, the web standards instead of trying to reinvent their own stuff.
Which is good. That's a good plan. Looking at the shadow DOM as a long-term way of doing complex updates by basically diffing the changes of the DOM and applying them once. Just amazing stuff. But I do think we're probably a year out from that, don't you?
Yeah, I can't say a time frame.
Yeah, I just want them to get it right,
Yeah, I don't care if it takes a little bit longer, just as long as everything is done smoothly and there's no hiccups.
It's going to be worth it, I think, when they're finished.
Yep.
All right, so you're committed to the Angular platform, which is good. And from a developer's perspective, if you're a JavaScript developer and you've used Gulp, it's a Gulp-based build, and you use SAS. So again, also kind of some standards there and usable plugins. Is there anything you would recommend people to do if they want to pick up and play with Ionic, like areas they should focus on first?
You do need to know some of the concepts that Cordova comes with.
I mean, it sounds like Cordova would be a big one.
Yeah, for setting up some of the native plugins, you know, giving their docs a read, try messing around with some of their projects. But it's kind of tough because before I actually was with Ionic, I was using Ionica and it was still like early alpha. And it was like before I had ever touched any kind of Angular. So I didn't know anything coming for it. And I just kind of dove head in, just learned as I went on. So saying, you know, what should you learn before you actually use Ionic? You don't really need to pick up too much. Some of the concepts, you know, we tried as hard as we possibly can to keep the docs clear and, you know, provide good examples. So like you can learn from that. And then, you know, if you are really interested in trying to figure out how to do something better in Angular, there's loads of resources out there that you can use.
Don't you have a runner tool to show samples? Somewhere I've seen that.
We have. Are you talking about the Ionic view?
That might be it. Well, I'm looking for, there was a place where you could kind of see the JavaScript and see the template and see a render of it.
Hmm. We did have something called a scratch pad early on. Not sure where that stands right now. It was kind of created and then we put it aside to focus on some other stuff. But if you really want to like mess around with it and actually learn on the go, you know, we have our CodePens page where you...
Oh, that's it. That's what I was thinking of, CodePens.
Yeah. We have examples about just about everything that we can think of in all of our components. So that way you can just kind of look at it, see what some of the different changes are before you actually go ahead and write any code.
Right. That's what I was thinking of. And it looks like it's codepen.io/ionic. So there's that. There's also, I guess, if you are a Cordova person and you're getting into it, there's a project that's an Angular project called NG Cordova, right? That kind of makes it easier to do things like interact with cameras and stuff like that.
Right. One issue that people were having early on was when they went to go integrate some of these Cordova plugins, there really was no clean way of doing it. You'd have to window.cordova. Whatever the plugin name, you would have to actually look at what the namespace is for it. And it became kind of problematic. It started off with doing all the core plugins, and then it's been expanded on to Touch ID. OAuth's a big one. And it's all based off of, you know, Angular factories and services. So everything's in scope, right? It's all promise-based. It makes working with some of these Cordova plugins much easier.
So you basically just mount the directive, the module. It looks like a Cordova plugin command, and then just use their API, this NG Cordova module API.
Yep, so you'd use the add the NG Cordova module to your entire application. So you would inject Ionic and then NG Cordova. And then from inside all your controllers, you can just go ahead and call the plugin-specific factory and go from there.
This is very cool because just looking at it, I see your point. It's all promise-based. You do the then and you do whatever you want with the result. So you know you're interacting pretty well and it's in Angular semantics.
Yeah. Again, it keeps everything all in that same kind of mind space. You're not trying to change, you know, your thought patterns.
Now, Drifty's building a visual builder for Ionic. Is that right?
Yeah, we have something called the Ionic Creator. So essentially, it gets back to the roots of, you know, we were an interface builder. We did the Jetstrap and Kotica, and that was kind of, you know, where we started from. So we did a interface builder. So that way, if you wanted to like get the idea of what your app's going to be, you can go ahead and, you know, use the drag and drop interface builder, get the concept down before you ever touch any code. And then once you have something that you think is usable, you can actually hit an export button and get the code downloaded to your system.
Yeah, I saw someone use Kotica to put together a jQuery UI app that way. And they were doing all their kind of, you know, prototyping there, and then they saved it and edited it. So I guess this is going to be the same kind of thing where it'd be very quick to get the user interface up and running. Are you going to be able to right-click and add scripts and things like that?
Probably not. That's not really the point of it. The point is, if you're not a technical person and you want to be involved in the process, this is where it's going to shine.
Good. So it's like a tech prototype kind of thing, or UI prototyper. And is that going to be a commercial project, or do you see that as being some sort of pay for service kind of thing? Or
Actually, no. I believe it's going to be. It's free.
All right, cool. So not to take the thunder away from your entire talk at ATE. The good news is you can't show code here, right? So this is more to get people interested in going to your talk. So you're going to take us through a tour of Ionic. Is that the goal of the talk?
Yeah, right. We're going to look at some, you know, Ionic. What are some of the parts that make up Ionic? You know, what's a quick kind of crash course on Angular and Cordova? And then how can we go and take these two and build out an actual fully functioning mobile app and deploy it to iOS and Android rather quickly?
All right. Mike Hardington, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about Drifty, Ionic, and Cordova and all the stuff we covered.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks to Mike Hardington of Drifty for coming on the show today and talking about the Ionic framework. You can find out more about the framework at ionicframework.com. Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to the TechCast via iTunes or at the TechCast page. That link is chariotsolutions.com/TechCast. You can view show notes for the show. It's show number 88. While you're there, you can browse the other podcasts, such as our developer news segments, or look at blogs, presentations, and screencasts from all of our developers and speakers at prior events. We love your feedback. Send me a tweet at @krimple or email techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com. The show tweets as @techcast. And that's it for now. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.